Good morning. 00 hours. Rain. 72 degrees. Good morning. 01 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning. 02 hundred hours. Cloudy. 69 degrees. Good morning. 03 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning. 04 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning. 05 hundred hours. Partly cloudy. 69 degrees. Good morning. 06 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 69 degrees. Good morning. 07 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 68 degrees. Good morning. 08 hundred hours. Mostly cloudy. 69 degrees. Good morning. 09 hundred hours. Cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning. 10 hundred hours. Cloudy. 70 degrees. Good morning. 11 hundred hours. Cloudy. 74 degrees.
This is
Good afternoon. 1200 hours. 75 degrees. Good afternoon. 1300 hours. Mostly cloudy. 73 degrees. Good afternoon. 1400 hours. Cloudy. 76 degrees. Good afternoon. 1500 hours. 78 degrees. Good afternoon. 1600 hours. Partly sunny. 75 degrees. Good afternoon. 1700 hours. Mostly sunny. 81 degrees. Good evening. 1800 hours. Sunny. 80 degrees. Good evening. 1900 hours. sunny. 82 degrees.
This is WA2J. WA8TJE, Canada. I'm a train.
Good evening, 2000 hours. Mostly sunny. 81 degrees. Good evening, 21 hours. Mostly sunny. 78 degrees. Good evening, 22 hours. Clear. 75 degrees.
KF8AYL, monitoring. KF8AYL, KEHCV. KEHCV, KF8AYL. This is KEHCV. What did I lose you there? I responded to your transmission, and then there was nothing.
I was on the 3-2. Peter and Saginaw. I think there might be an issue. That's the second. I answered somebody and never heard them. It's got terrible SWR for a phone. I played around with it to see if it would tune on the upper part of 40 meters and I didn't like the results. Maybe you need longer radios or more of them for that part of the band. I'm not sure. But I did play around with radios. I had two set. And the radio's off. And I went, well, they're clearly doing something.
Well, I mean, 1.4, 1.5 isn't horrible. It's not great, but you know, for a base, you know, for if you're using it as a base or something, yeah, that's probably not desirable. I get it.
I plan on using it for POTA, so I'm going to. Weather's more appropriate tomorrow. I plan on going down to my park. There's a nice larger open area, and I plan on rechecking the tuning on it, and then I'll probably go somewhere else that's even a larger open space, different soil composition, and test it there, because technically my township is marshland. So it's clay and hard soils, so I'm really not really sure where I have to go to find a different composition, but most of the places that I plan on using, it's marshland, so if it works here, it should work there, because all the POTA sites near me is DNR land, and it's marsh.
No, I do not. I got so much crap going on
right now that I, this is as far I'm going to go in the world for the time being anyway, for a year or so probably. I'm probably not going to get into this stuff until I retire and have a lot more time to play around with stuff. Well, I loaded up a PSK report.info and typed in my call sign to see what kind of signal strength I was getting. And Texas, I had like a negative 15 at 15 watts. And all throughout this, and I was seeing negative 22. Ohio, 15. I think the best was in that was in Wisconsin. I even got outside of the United States. I got a report in Canada that was pretty good. It was less than 20. And I forgot the part of the country, but it's on the other side over there, near Russia, somewhere over there. I saw a report come up, and it was like 15 or 20 or something. I think that was the 18 I saw. So it was doing pretty good. I saw this one call sign. It was W0RLD. The word world. So it says CQ world on my screen. I got to work this guy.
The transmit bait call sign. I could see that. That's pretty funny. I heard some guy come over the GMRS with W-O-Z-Z. I'm like, is that real? Or I think it was W-O-Z-Y, W-O-Z-Z, something like that. With you know, the three numbers after it. But, I don't know if that, I should probably go look that one. Was that actually real?
Yeah, another good clickbait one is coax. K0AXL, he gets on the Fusion Network Pleasant Valley repeater system. and he's the one that introduced me to GLARG VEC for doing online VE exams for people. It's a pretty cool group of people, too, by the way. I think I worked him on digital as well.
I actually bought a digital capable radio a little while back because it was like half off, but I've not pulled it out of the box because I know it's going to be a big giant rabbit hole of and figuring it out and all that crap. A bunch of people told me you just ditch the OEM firmware on it. The open source firmware stuff on it's much better. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I know it's going to be a bunch of time that I don't have right now.
By the sound of it, you bought yourself a DMR radio.
Yeah, I think it's listed as such.
What brand did you get?
All right, it's a TYT MD9600.
Is that the mobile style or the HT style?
It's a 50-watt mobile.
Yeah, hook that up to your computer with Chirp and with the appropriate cable. Download your radio to your Chirp. That way you get your... And then put your channels into it. Save it and upload it back to your radio. That's the easiest method. And there's some very complicated crap you got to put in there, like your DMR ID and some other stuff. But I played around with the Alinco one time. I was able to get it working somewhat. I didn't have any DMR repeaters nearby, but I used it with a hotspot. And I would like to say I had a great experience, but I didn't. Apparently, I bought a lemon, and the radio just wasn't wanting to work. Trying to get it to work with the FM repeaters, it kind of barely hit my 3 mile away main repeater, which is the 2.4. And that thing got the footprint down to flat, and that HTU could barely hit it. Every other radio I had hit it just fine. Yeah, I had troubles using spot. I got into a TGIF group, and I ran into like 10 or 15 people had that radio and swear up and down and love it. And I told them what my problem was, and they said, return it. You bought a lemon. So I did, but I went with a Fusion radio instead. Yeah, so when I bought that, apparently everybody says the OEM firmware is horrible, and to get right off the bat and use this open software called OP77 or something like that, and just put that on it right away, and then it's much easier to program, you know, even with the chirp or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I know it's going to be a big time consumer, so I'm trying to do a bunch of other stuff right now. I'd like to, but hey, see. Well, if it doesn't work out for you, I'm sure you can find somebody to sell it to. I recommend Fusion. Fusion, there's no programming. It's just plug and go. and you can hook up a hotspot, PiStar, or you just buy one from TGIF to keep build them. Just you get into any DNR group with Fusion crossover. Yeah, I'd actually done a little bit of research beforehand, and where I'm at in the UP, there's pretty much no Fusion around there. It's all DMR in that area. So I don't know. I don't know anything about it. It's something new for me to get into that I'm looking forward to at some point. Yeah, according to that address you gave me, you're pretty far up there. The Eastern Michigan Link don't go that far up yet, but they do have one or two upper peninsula, but it's closer to the lake. So, but they're expanding all the time. Who knows? Maybe they'll have up close enough to where you can hit it with a beam. Yeah, well, after I get this building in up north, which is one of the things I'm working on, I'm going to have to build the stupid thing myself, because builders there seem to want stupid money to put anything up. I'm going to get some kind of tower on the edge of it or on top of it or something. So, and I'm on a bluff on Lake Superior there, so if I can get that, then I'll be really set up for that particular area for sure. I'll be going out over the lake and pretty much across the whole west end of the UP there. Should be able to. That's weird. She just said that. Hasn't been 10 minutes yet. KEHCB, Friday. Yeah, if she doesn't finish, she wants to take it, because I think it's... I think it's a protocol to
say it every hour or something?
Yeah, every 10 minutes, just like we're supposed to do. Makes a great clock. If you hear it go, you missed your cue. Yeah. So what have you been up to today? It's been awfully muggy. Were you out in that crappy weather?
Today was the day job and then a bunch of research on how to do burn foundations. 2,500 ways to do it. I just can't seem to pick one.
Yeah. Burn foundation, that's for your place up north?
Yeah, that's affirmative. I'm trying to get a burn in up there, so I mean there's an old house on the property that's kind of good enough to, you know, use as a cabin for now. People were living in it, but it's pretty rough. It's been neglected, and that all needs redone. So my plan was I'm going to build this barn because there's no anything. So I want a barn anyway, so I'm going to build a barn. That way I can stage all the stuff that I'm going to need to be able to redo the house. And then when that's done, we can move up there. That's my master plan anyway. We'll see if it works out.
Have you looked into those pre-built homes, like Tesla homes? See if it'd be cheaper to have one of those sent up and installed?
Well, I might get lynched in the community if I did that for the house, because the house that's there is actually a historic home. It's the old Stanton Mill superintendent's home, and you know, it's in books and other stuff, but the mining company owned it in the 1900s through 1978, something like that. The Stanton Mill shut down in 26, and then the mining company just owned it and rented it out to anybody that wanted to be there. And for the most part, in like the 50s and 60s and 70s, it was just used as a summer camp. And somebody bought it in 78 and kind of redid it and put heat back in it and stuff like that. So and then they were living in it. It's a really nice home. The woodwork is gorgeous inside. It's just been really neglected. It just needs kind of gone through in total. Like, all the mechanicals are garbage. Everything needs done. You know, the plaster's all cracked. That all needs to come out and be redone. And just stuff like that. But the home itself, the bones are really good. If I tore it down, they'd be... I think the locals would be,
buy a historical home, huh? You probably got to go through Historical Society to paint the door.
That I don't. There is none of that up there. There's actually not even any zoning, so I could do whatever I wanted to do.
Well, that's good news. Yeah, you're going to have to go through that place and gut it and get rid of all the knob and tube wiring and everything to make it safe to live in.
Oh, well, there's knob and tube. Some of it's active, some of it's not. Like the first several ones I put my meter to, they weren't active. I'm like, okay, so all this knob, and I put my meter to a couple other sections of it. I'm like, oh, these ones are active. All right, well, got to watch out for, I mean, there's everything in it. That's the problem with the mechanicals, is there's 25 generations, you know, there's knob and tube, there's the silvers, 40, 50, 60 stuff, there's some Romex, there's, you know, people hacking on stuff in places, it's a total mess.
Yeah, that's one thing I know, like, about old homes, is all the stuff people leave behind in them. When they upgraded it, they sold out, but it it's so much work that they just put new in and leave the old, creating problems for the future generations.
Nobody does that. Nobody tears out the old stuff. They just add on there. And I think the last 20 years, the people that were living there that we bought it from, I don't think they knew what they were doing. They would have people come in and do, you know, they like an electrician or a plumber or whatever. And I think those contractors would come in and go, yeah, I ain't touching any of this. I'm just going to add on some stuff over here to make do work, make work what you want to work.
Yeah, it's a whole legal thing. Had a contractor come out to do a roof on our house one year, and as he was taking the plywood off, because it was damaged, to put new plywood down, he had to point out a few things. Apparently, the person that built the home cut some corners, and he can't touch it, because if he touches that one little thing, he legally has to go over the entire house and fix every corner that was cut, shortcutted. Just to the way the rules are, I guess. Which is probably why the contractors stay away from the tube and wiring, because then they got to gut the whole thing, costing them more time and money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm was pretty used to looking at some of those homes up there. When I first walked into that basement utility room in the downstairs up there, I was taken aback. I'm like, oh my God, this is a total, like the boilers, you know, half a foot from the electrical box, you know, the main electrical box, and there's 25 add-on little fuse boxes to the main electrical, and I'm like, oh my God, this whole room just needs to be nuked.
And if you go online and look up houses being rewired and stuff like that, you'll see some horror story videos where people's houses would catch fire and stuff. Somebody would put a nail through the fixture. Well, they struck the knob and tube wiring, and they got electrocuted and lit the wall on fire. And every video with the licensed experts, the ones that put videos up teaching caution, they say, if you got knob and tube, pull that stuff out. And then they point to the video and say, this is why.
Well, you can deactivate it all, too, and run Romex or do whatever, but all the plaster's cracked everywhere, so, the whole house needs to come down to its kind of studs, so you can pull all that crap out, rewire it, replumb it. I already did kind of replumb it. I ran PEX everywhere and bypassed the old 1900s galvanized crap that looked like some 140-year-old artery, just to have working plumbing, because it wasn't really working well at all. But, the electrical is a mess, the heating's a mess, we'll see how it works.
Well, the great thing about you taking it down to the studs, you get all that old stuff out of there. You can increase the cavity size of the wall so you get proper insulation to keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer.
Oh, the walls are plenty thick. The walls are 12-inch rough sawn. 12-inch. 1 foot. But they're not insulated. Somebody did do a half-ass blow-in job. I think the guy who bought it from the mining company in the 70s, when he wanted to live there, I think he did the blow-in job in the late 70s. It's not very good, though. It's really inconsistent. Because back then, when they built those homes, they had steam heat from the stamp mill. the whole little town there had free steam heat from the cement mill, so nobody cared if they had free supply. I just ran steam pipes through the whole little town for the 30 homes that were there, and the superintendent's house, our house, is up on the hill, kind of away from town a little bit, but free steam heat, yep.
Oh, you got some nice wall cavities there. My house was built in 1958, and I only got 7/8 of an inch, less than 1 inch, for a cavity. And they're not insulated. And it just got the firewall sheet in there, and that's it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun trying to pick somebody else's mess. I don't like doing that under normal circumstances, but in this case, to save a historic home, gotta post it. The home itself is, say, the bones are perfect, and the roof line is awesome. It's not sagged, you know, everything is perfectly straight. It's really well built. I mean, it's got 9.5-foot ceilings on the first floor. It's got walk-in closets. It's got big window opening. Kind of unheard of things for 1900. So, I want to save that, the structure, but yeah, it needs redone.
How much have you got started on it? You got it out yet?
This is KF8AYL Friday. No, I haven't done anything to the house yet aside from run new PEX plumbing to all the fixtures so I can drain it easily and have working plumbing, because that wasn't really working. But like I said, the plan is I'm going to build this barn, and then I can stage all the materials and things I need for to fix up the house, and then we'll get that done and move up there and retire. Yeah, well, we'll see what the scrappers are paying. They want to get a dollar.
KEACB. Do the scrappers pay any better up there compared to down here?
Copper, but for steel, steel pretty much the same.
I figure being pretty much nowhere that they pay a little bit better.
Yeah, I cut all of that old galvanized pipe out of there, and I had a bunch of other steel that was just strewn about the property that I collected, and there was an old wood boiler in the basement that was all cracked and not working. That was like myself. I had to torch the thing up in the basement to get it out of there. I have no idea anybody even got that in there, but yeah, it was same price as it was going for down here. I got rid of all that.
So you go up there every now and then to do a little work?
There about every 2 weeks out of the month, but I've been home a lot lately because my wife's had surgery on her foot and able to walk for the last 4 weeks. She's now just getting to put some weight on it and kind of starting to get off the crutches. So when she gets back to walking and driving, I'm going to go back up there and build this barn.
Got the barn on order?
Not specifically, no. I'm not doing a I have it spec'd out. I know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm just going to buy the pieces as I'm going from the local place. They're giving me a pretty decent discount. That Menards, I mean, Menards is the closest place, big box stores in Marquette. That's an hour and a half away. the local place is pretty close, and it's local, so I can just pop in there with a trailer and pick up as I need. I don't need to. I'm just going to do that piece. Yeah, it's also easier on the pocketbook.
I didn't mean like a kit. I meant like you had it specced out like a kit, and they pull all the pieces and drop it off to, you know, make your life easier. I was just wondering if you did it that way or not.
Built up for me, and they're ready to buy it. I just need to tell them. I'm like, no, I'm going to buy this in pieces. I'm going to do, like, this section. I'm going to need these pieces, and that's, you know, a quarter of the cost. And then a few months later, I'm going to come around with the next order. That's going to be another quarter of the cost or whatever. And they're all good with that.
Hey, you got any friends up there that are going to help you put the barn together?
Yes and no. I know a couple of guys that own vacation homes there, so they're there sometimes. They said they've helped me, but, you know, they kind of got to be around and already there. So, yeah, I mean, I'll have some help. A neighbor down the road, I know him. He said he'll help, you know, if I need help setting trusses, you know, a couple extra hands for a few hours on a day. No big deal. So, stuff like that. Yeah, I got some hands. But for the most part, it's going to be a one-man show.
You know, when you get that place all built and done, you're definitely going to be ready to retire. You'd be too tired to pick up the radio.
We'll see. It should be fine. The money they were coming in at was like, you know, materials were like X, and they were wanting about 3.5 times X of material. Like, what? Where are you getting these numbers? I can't even if I spec'd 5 guys for, you know, at $200 an hour for, and put them in their own hotel rooms and with $200 a day per diems, and I can't get anywhere near these labor costs. How are you getting 3 and 4 times materials cost on your labor? I don't get it. I don't understand where they're coming from. But that's the market, you know, there, and people are buying things, so I'm like, I guess I'm doing this myself.
Yeah, they're just praying on the weak, basically, you know, the ones that can't do it themselves, and they got no choice but to pay outrageous prices to get it done because they can't go anywhere else. And they're just taking advantage of it, sounds like.
I don't know. I tried to do the math to see where their labor was coming from, and even if I doubled the man hours and did all kinds of ridiculous things, I could only get to about 2/3 of their labor numbers. That was with ridiculous assumptions. The realistic assumptions were way less. And I'm like, so you guys are wanting to profit. I don't know where they're coming from, but whatever. They're not getting my money, so.
Yeah, it might take you longer, but at least you'll have the money to get the place done the way you want it, and probably still have money to spare for that antenna and tower.
Yeah, I need it for that and my the Starlink internet that's there. I have a little mini Ron tower that I just stuck in the ground. It's only 1 10-foot section plus a 10-foot in the ground. That's
half of it's out. That's 15 foot plus the top. So I think it's 25 feet in the air, 30, 28 feet, something like that. And that start length's a little bit obstructed, so your internet gets a little bit cut off for little microsecond outages. But yeah, I need to get something up higher so I can get out of the church, the woods.
Sounds like it's going to be a very beautiful place when you get done.
Well, like I say, it's just a goal. We'll see if I can attain the goal. One step at a time, baby steps. Crap may happen between now and then, and it's going to be on the edge as far as affording it and being able to, goal-driven guy, so take the goal, spread it out, see if you can accomplish the steps to get to your goal. That's my goal.
When you finish the goal, you're going to have to take a really nice picture of the place and turn it into a QSL card.
One, what's a QSO card? I don't think I've heard of that term before.
Yeah, QSL card. It's a postcard. You send it to a ham. It has a picture on it, call sign. Mode and signal report.
Send this somehow over the radio.
People do use SSTV to send their QSL cards. I don't know how to do that, but I've read that you can. But usually the good old ES is how it's done. And then there's an electronic QSL. The website's eqsl.cc. And it's a free account. And you can set up a basic QSL card. And then you can set up your digital software or your log. Load your log. And automatically will send eQSL cards out to every ham that you work.
Well, that's interesting. Don't think I've heard of that. Site that.
Good evening. 23 hours. Partly cloudy. 75 degrees.
Yeah, QRZ. Yeah, I'm a member that have upload access, so my software can do it automatically. And eqsl.cc account. The software that does all that hard work. GridTrack, WXJTX software, which is used for doing FT8, FT4, and stuff like that. And so when you click log on that, it's passed over to GridTracker, and then GridTracker passes it on to those other three places. It just makes things easy and less complicated once you get it set up.
Alright, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I'm on the QRZ. I made an account there, but other than that, I've not looked into too many other things that are going on there. I don't even know why I made an account there. I think to be able to see how many people look me up, because a lot of people
especially will look you up.
You're definitely going to want to get a logbook of the world account. It's free. Just they make it more complicated than it needs to be, but it's free. Once it's set up and you're set up on your computer, it's easy. You just, you know, use a logging software like RumLogNG, which is free. And every time you make a contact, you log it. And, you know, you could upload daily, weekly, monthly. And it confirms your contact with the other person. And you get these digital certificates, continents, and a few other things I can't think off the top of my head. Little accomplishments you get.
Well, that's interesting. I have to look into that. Pretty interesting.
And they will automatically sync their logbook with Logbook of the World, so both have the exact same information, and the QRZ is easier to use. So setting that up automatically is the best way to go. And then when you log, you log in, go to your logbook on QR, but you can slither. Prerequisites. And a certificate, and they email it to you, and you can re-download it. I'll hang them up on the wall and stuff like that. It worked. But Hawaii is eluding me.
Can you say, HF, what bands are you actually doing that on mostly?
Well, it's mostly limited to what you got for antenna. I got a 20-meter dipole. I just got the 40-meter hamstick. I used to have a long wire. Well, I have it, but I took it down. But any of the bands, 6 all the way up to 180. And modes, and it's meters with Canada. And they all add up to give you certain ones, like your continents, your states, and stuff like that. And there's now POTA, P-O-T-A dot app, and you could do parks on the air as a hunter, where you hunt these HF signals, and you work them, they log it, and upload their log to POTA, and you log the contact on the POTA app, and once you get, like, it's kind of the same thing, like so many states activate places and get stuff. And if you're really into traveling, you could travel and activate every state and stuff like that if you're into traveling. But and have fun doing that. Off the mosquitoes, because it's, well, marshland.
Do the higher elevations matter as much at those band levels?
I'm not 100% sure on that one. Heights might always, but there's different configurations, different style antennas and stuff. Like, you You can do an NV IS, I think it's called. It's basically more of a vertical takeoff. So if you're in a place where you're lower to the ground, you can use that antenna and it'll shoot your signal up higher.
Make a great hobby when you're taking your lunch and your coffee break while you're working on that barn.
Yeah, it could be interesting. I might find some time here. Do something with some of the lower bands. Maybe I'll go get the general. We'll see. I'll probably do it anyway at some point. It could happen.
Yeah, who knows? You'll be out there working on your barn, get on FT8, and you'll see my call sign one of these days, probably.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard some really weird call signs up there. You get a lot of different ones coming over the UHF, PHF, around there. Well, there's a lot of Canadian ones that come through from across the lake.
Yeah, the Victor calls. Yep.
Well, I see a mouse milling over in the corner of my barn here, and I'm gonna go smash that bag. I'm gonna say 73. Well, I got an eye on this bastard.
All right, KEACV 73.
KEACV KF8 a while.